We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, driven by Geico. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that guy over there, still way over there. In sunny Southern California, my beloved co-host, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
Hey, I'm wonderful. This is our first recorded show of 2022. I was up at 5-something this morning. We're recording this the Sunday, January 2nd, if my dates are correct. Woke up at the crack of dawn, played some tennis with a senior citizen. I'm feeling good. I watched a lot of football these past few days. I have a lot of thoughts, and I'm excited to share them with you and whoever else is, you know, listening in on this show. So I'm rad, Ty. How you doing?
I am doing well. It was a great weekend of football. Happy New Year to one and all listening. We appreciate your supporting our show. Don't forget to subscribe or follow. And then if you can, rate or review out on Apple or Spotify. Check out verballers.com. It's going to continue deep into the offseason. We've got plans. We'll start talking about those before long. Verballers.com is our wonderful Patreon community that was popping off as the New Year's Six and playoff games were transpiring on Friday and Saturday. And finally, SolidGiveaway.com. As you know, we're giving away that Desmond Howard signed mini helmet. You got about a week left to enter that latest contest. Again, it's free to join. Just a few short steps that you need to go through and get your hat in the ring, your name in the hat to win again. That signed Desmond Howard mini helmet, Daniel.
I would strongly recommend it.
So what was your watch situation now? I know you're far from home. Yeah. You're out there in sunny Southern California, which hasn't been all that sunny for you, unfortunately.
No, it's nice now. It's nice now. You saw it on TV yesterday with Utah, Ohio State, that the sun did come out, and it was a glorious winter Southern California weekend.
What was your watch situation on Friday and Saturday? How much football did you watch? More importantly, what
all
did you
it.
Eat? These are what the people care about.
Yeah, no, those are all relevant questions. During the playoff, we had giant Italian sandwiches. That would be Friday afternoon and late afternoon into the evening Pacific. Yesterday during, what did I have yesterday? Yesterday we had some pizza for lunch. I went out and got like a late extended breakfast type situation with coffee and a cookie and some avocado toast, because that's what you do when you're in Southern California. The thing was a brick, by the way. I went to a place called Lodge Bread between some of the games, and it was great. I ate a lot of food, and last night I was so stuffed, I think I kind of forgot to eat dinner or was just not in the mood, and that's very unusual for me. But I was watching Baylor Ole Miss, and you know, I focused all my energy there. So watched it downstairs. Kids running and crawling around. Solid, not solid wife, Jody with an I, was not happy during the Michigan-Georgia game. Not her finest hour as a fan. Alabama-Cincy was a good watch. And yeah, during some of the morning bowl games, Pacific time, yesterday, I kind of snuck up to the room I'm staying in and watched them on a laptop to avoid parenting duty and sort of be left alone because that's, I don't know, desperate times, et cetera, et cetera. But all in all, a lot of football consumed, a lot of football thoughts bouncing around my dumb brain.
We had two playoff games that took place on Friday evening, New Year's Eve. We had a bunch of other really high-level contests that took place on New Year's Day, of course, many of the New Year's Six. We'll get into all of that and much, much more. Again, don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com, where, of course, you can find more information on all of our previous episodes and all of the articles that we're going to continue posting throughout the offseason, Dan. Why don't we start with playoff semifinal numero uno? They played this one at the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic in Arlington. It was between number one Alabama, number four Cincinnati. Again, your point spread going into this game was about 14 points, right? So Vegas was saying, we think Alabama is demonstrably better. As these things typically go over the course of time, I think you and I both talked ourselves into Cincinnati plus the points. And there was, I think, good reason for that, right? Cincinnati has been a really good team. They've been just as good as most of the other teams that were vying for that final playoff spot. They had a good defense. They had two shutdown corners, potentially a top draft pick or first or second round draft pick in Desmond Ridder, an Alabama transfer in Jerome Ford. There were plenty of weapons to, I think, be excited about on that Cincinnati side of the ball. What we didn't know is how they would pair up against a team like an Alabama. We saw them against Notre Dame early in the year, I think before Notre Dame improved. And so it was a bit of an open question, like, we like Cincinnati, but are they going to be competitive with Alabama?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, they were competitive for a chunkier time than I would have expected given some of their offensive limitations and executing in higher leverage moments. This was a 17-6 game pretty deep, right? What was, I mean, 17-6 in the third quarter, end of the third quarter, something like that. And they were a successful drive away from it becoming a 17-13 game, 17-14 game, and really coming down to the wire. Now, great teams win those moments. Great teams figure out ways to get, you know, Federian, I apologize if I pronounced his name wrong, Mathis's hand in a passing lane over and over again, and to come up big on third down and fourth down, and to complete those tricky passes, and to make key tackles in key moments. Alabama's that team. But this is arguably the worst modern Bama team, which is, you know, it's all relative, of course. But no, I think there was good reason to think that if Cincinnati could come through in those moments, which is what those scenarios require for a team who is, vastly less deep and less talented, that's what it needs. And I thought Cincinnati gave it their all on defense and probably weren't expecting that run heavy a performance from Bill O'Brien and Brian Robinson.
I want to talk about that. Yeah, continue.
Yeah. But I thought they came to play, especially in the second half. I thought they adjusted really well. I thought the corners played well. They were able to keep some of the explosive plays in check, and Alabama sort of took what Cincinnati gave them, which is what really strong teams do. And it just came down to something we talked about, and it's where is the electricity coming from on offense? And unfortunately, it was not coming from Desmond Ridder. And it was not, you know, in those key moments, in the red zone, on third down, on fourth down, that was the difference. It was the Bama pass rush, and it was the lack of ability to adjust and say, okay, A, B aren't working. Here's C, D, and E. And since he just didn't have it, I don't think it's any sort of referendum on Cincinnati. They're just not as good as Alabama.
Well, and that's it. I mean, Cincinnati was held to 218 yards in total, 144 through the air, 74 on the ground, just 2 of 12 on third downs. It wasn't a case where there were any horrible mistakes. They didn't have any turnovers. There wasn't a terrible coaching decision or anything like that. They just very clearly went up against a better team. That should come
they
as no great
to
surprise
kick
to any
in
of
the
us.
Red zone. Did they not? Did they opt to kick on like fourth and medium in the red zone? I think a lot of people were commenting like, do you beat Alabama doing this? Probably not.
Yeah, but you also beat Alabama if you score 21 more points. And regardless.
Also true.
regardless, Cincinnati was just not the better team in this game. Alabama, to your point, took a real ride on the Underthink Express when they put this game plan together. I think the logic must have been, hey, our line is awesome, so maybe we'll just run it. Mm-hmm. And Brian Robinson's a house. He's a dude. He hasn't always gotten a ton of work this year, but in this moment, 26 carries, 204 yards on the day. Six of those carries came in the very first drive of the game. And we were talking about this in the Verballer Discord. It was one of those deals where Cincinnati was trying not to get the top blown off. They were trying to prevent against the Jameson Williams big play, and they're playing guys deep, and they just kept handing it off.
Yep.
So six of those carries, very first drive, it was apparent from the jump what Bama was going to do. All told, they finish as a team with 47 carries for over 300 yards on the ground. Bama was just content to take 6 yards a pop.
Of course.
And pick their spots, because there were moments in this game where Cincinnati chose not to play that shell, and that was when Bryce Young got him. All three of Alabama's touchdowns, by the way, were through the air from Bryce Young. Bryce Young didn't need to have an incredible day like we saw from C.J. Stroud or Jack Cohen or some of the other names that we'll talk about, because they were so effective on the ground. So good on them for doing what they could, to your point, taking what the defense gave them. And they won this one 27-6 in pretty resounding fashion, even though it was closer late. And even though it did seem as if Cincinnati had chances where they could have maybe gotten this thing a little bit closer, it was clear from the jump that Alabama was just flat out better.
Yeah, it was also clear that like the mistakes that Cincinnati did make are mistakes that just can't happen, be it on special teams, offense, or defense. And that, you're right, I think you nailed it. It's Bill O'Brien. Every time Bill O'Brien dropped back for, you know, dropped Bryce Young back to pass on first or second down, it almost felt like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
It, like, at his best, Bill O'Brien was looking at two high safeties for Cincinnati and saying, okay, yeah, still, okay, just going to hand it off again. And it was the right move. I'm sure Bama fans were sort of frustrated with some of the play calling at times, that Bama was not able to capitalize on how sort of sluggish Cincinnati's offense was made to appear by a swarming Bama defense, which, with, by the way, playing two backup corners,
yeah,
and Cincinnati was not able to make all that much hay in the passing game. I think Desmond Ridder finished with something like 4 or 5 yards per attempt. So, I mean, it's a testament to how deep and prepared the secondary is, but this was not Bama at its strongest on either side of the ball with John Metchie out. So kudos to Alabama, but I can understand the frustration, which is very weird to say that, oh, maybe Alabama should have won this game 38-6 instead of the way that they did it, that they weren't able to take advantage of Cincinnati giving them the ball that much. But otherwise, a nice workmanlike effort. Covered the spread, moving on for... they have to beat Georgia again for some reason. That's the way this sport works.
That's the way this works, yeah. So
yeah.
Cincinnati, one thing I did want to push back on, and I saw some people talking about this on Twitter, of course, the ultimate marketplace of bad ideas.
Of course.
I want to push back on the notion that Cincy didn't belong here. We have seen more teams than I could probably count aloud go up against a team like an Alabama or a Clemson in these playoff games and have a similar result. I don't view this as any great indictment of Cincinnati football. They deserve to be there. They were the only undefeated team at the end of the year. They are obviously no longer unbeaten. This will be disappointing for them. But the job that Luke Fickell did, the players that are on that team are very, very good. And just because they lost here in pretty resounding fashion, I just don't buy into the notion that they didn't belong. They belonged as much as anybody else.
Was there anybody specifically that you respected or respect that said Cincinnati didn't belong? Or is that just the general, like, bad vibes in the ether that you want to respond
bad,
to?
Bad vibes in the ether.
Okay.
Like I said, there was plenty of Twitter conversation out there, most of which I think was positive for Cincinnati. But there were some bad apples who were like, oh, well, this is... You know, I just don't buy into that.
Well, I can tell you this. After a full day of football and a full bowl season short of we have LSU Kansas State left and the national championship at the time of recording, there isn't a top 10 team where I thought to myself, man, if only they got it instead
exactly.
of Cincinnati.
That's my point.
If only Notre Dame's second half against Oklahoma State was on display against Alabama, would we have ourselves a real playoff? Or Oklahoma State's first half against Alabama? Like, there, it just isn't that team that exists. So, I don't even think about those things. It happened that Cincinnati got in. I'm good with it. I wanted to see what they could do. They came up short. I'm on to Michigan, Georgia.
Michigan, Georgia was our DraftKings game of the week. It was the second of two playoff semifinals. They played this one at the Capital One Orange Bowl and Hard Rock Stadium down there in Miami Gardens. The final was 34-11 in favor of the Georgia Bulldogs. And, you know, this one sort of went the way I had been thinking. Lo and behold, it finally happened where I got one right.
You spoke with your chest.
I spoke with my chest, and it just so happened that that's how it panned out. On the whole, Georgia bottled up the run. They forced Michigan to throw it 36 times, which is definitely not what Jim Harbaugh had in mind. And I get it. Those numbers are going to be skewed a bit because Michigan went down early. But clearly that was not the game Michigan wanted to play in order to beat Georgia. In the end, they have three turnovers. They're fighting for their lives. They're trying to get back in this thing. But Stetson Bennett is feeling it. On the other side of the field, he went 20 of 30, 313, three touchdowns, no interceptions, really accurate with the football, popped a few big gainers in this one. We had all sorts of scuttlebutt talking about Stetson Bennett's quite the athlete, or Stetson Bennett putting the doubters to shame, all of those narratives that I'm sure we're sick and tired of hearing about. Look, Stetson Bennett deserves the praise. He had a great game.
Oh,
he did
yeah.
a good job. The Georgia defense did what the Georgia defense has done all season and contained a good offense in the Michigan Wolverines. They just didn't have an answer for that. They were not able to get any kind of foothold. It's not even that they were that terrible on third downs or any, like, they were just outclassed here. It was much the same that we saw with the Alabama and Cincinnati game, where there was something that they wanted to do. They could not do it. Georgia had more ways to respond. And in the end, over the course of 60 minutes, that's how you get a 34-11 final score.
Everything Georgia did, and everybody who did that, did those things for Georgia, was better than everything Michigan did and the players that Michigan tried to do those things with. There wasn't a single element to this game that I thought to myself, if the rest of Michigan started playing like this part of Michigan, they'd have a chance.
Right.
The offensive line was overwhelmed. The defensive line was overwhelmed. You saw how great of a job did David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson do against the Georgia offensive line. Not a great job, Ty, right?
No,
they were completely held down. And that's the strength. That is one of the best pass rushing duos in the country, if not the best pass rushing duo. Stetson Bennett had time. And even when he didn't have time, he was getting passes off. And it was, whether it's Brock Bowers doing Brock Bowers things as one of the best 1-2-3 tight ends in the country as a freshman, whether it's Jermaine Burton getting past Vince Gray on that longer touchdown catch, whatever it was, whether it's N'Kobe Dean going from, where was this game? This game was in Miami, going from Tallahassee to the other side. Like, he's moving across the state in a way that quickly. And so it making plays the way that Georgia was able to do. They give up, what, the long touchdown pass essentially in garbage time. But Georgia came out more prepared, and Georgia was prepared to force Michigan to make perfect plays in order to march the ball downfield. And we saw it early on when, you know, Cade McNamara on whatever it was, third and four, third and six, where, okay, he has to hit this slant to keep the drive going. Georgia defends it. It's a bad pass. They're fourth and six. He throws an out that's just not good enough. And when Georgia is at its best, you need to be the most perfect version of yourself to hang around. And Michigan was not the most perfect version of itself, let alone a team with an ability to hang around. And so what Georgia did was wall-to-wall dominance. And as great of a season as Michigan had, it was obvious that they just couldn't hang. The waves with which Georgia came at the Wolverines on defense, the confidence. I mean, Stetson Bennett at this point, and I tweeted this out, like, what are we talking about in terms of modern Georgia quarterbacks? Like, what more could he have done this year? He had a couple of dud quarters or halves or something this year, but where he's led this team, and I know there's clamoring for JT Daniels because of a perceived higher ceiling. Has there been a Georgia quarterback who has been this good on a great Georgia team who has made the winning plays that he's made? If you want to talk about Aaron Murray, has had a dud of a season and a half for this Georgia program. Matt Stafford has thrown in some duds. Like, we just need, as a collective unit, a college football unit, we need to put a lot more respect on Stetson Bennett's name as not just like a cute story, post carrier hat, whatever. He's a full-on, very, very good quarterback who is a heartbeat, a gust of wind from becoming a national championship-winning quarterback for Georgia. An unreal player.
He's been good, and you know what? He's gotten better. Because for sure. I remember when we had these types of conversations a year ago, and I'll use that Alabama game from a year ago as an example. Stetson Bennett threw a couple interceptions. I don't recall if it was two or three, but it was at least two. And there was a moment in the 2020 season where this guy is suddenly the quarterback. No one knows how to feel about him. He's playing pretty well until suddenly he's not. And at that point, everybody jumps off the bandwagon like, see, I told you, this guy's not that good. He now was thrust back into this starting role this season. Again, JT Daniels perceived to have the higher ceiling, but Stetson Bennett's in there. He's been playing well. Yeah, he's had a few duds along the way, but we're pretty deep into this season now, Dan. Georgia's played 14 football games. I think the verdict is in. He's gotten better. He's improved his game to the nth degree. He's able to run the football. He's able to move the pocket. He's able to do some things that even JT Daniels probably wouldn't be able to do. He's a different player. And to get them to the point now where they've got the rematch against Alabama, you know, that breakdown's for another day. But his ability, I think, to respond in a big game like this is very notable. It's very notable. And it wasn't too big a stage for him, which I think is what you're always fearful of if you're looking at a quarterback and you're not sure if they're the real deal. So he definitely deserves all the praise that we could heap upon him. One thing I did want to go back to very quickly before we move on and talk about some of the other games here. The Georgia defense obviously playing at a monumentally incredible level. And the main bullet points are going to be things like the pass rush and the linebackers and all of the top-level talent on the defensive side of the ball. But sometimes it's just the little things. Sometimes it's little things like just upsetting the balance of the pocket or upsetting a quarterback's rhythm. And I think we saw that a lot in this game. Cade McNamara had two interceptions. Now, again, they were playing from behind most of the way. They were down 24 points at halftime. But even still, there were plenty of moments in this one where it was just a tick off from a timing perspective where the Georgia defenders got in there a little bit before Cade McNamara was expecting it and a pass was behind a guy or a pass was too slow to get out or it was just going to the wrong guy or a little too deep. It's just little things like that that can change the complexion of an offense that I think made it really hard for Michigan to have any hope of getting back into this thing. So even when it's not the top level stats, this Georgia defense led by your boy, Dan Lanning, did a really good job of changing the game. So good for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's true of all of these major games. It's quarterback and defense. A very strong quarterback can turn mediocre receivers into pretty good receivers and turn good receivers into great receivers and great receivers into all-timers, right? This is it's a position-dependent position receiver.
Yep.
With what Michigan tried to do, they tried to take what I think is a quarterback who at his best is pretty good, but in the aggregate, Cade McNamara is fine. His ceiling is evident. And with a quarterback like that, without an offensive line that can stand up to the best of Georgia, without, you know, all conference type receivers to throw to, there's just a limit that Michigan can only win in like two ways, one and a half to two ways. And I don't know if that's going to change with future recruiting classes or J.J. McCarthy, but with what Georgia is able to do with a quarterback who is full-on good, according to me, full-on good, who doesn't necessarily have that deep all-conference stable of receivers, but has a great tight end, has good receivers, has a very good offensive line, and obviously a defense to lean on, that his own defense is going to put the Georgia offense in such a great position week in and week out. It's the most obvious thing in the world. it's easier to win. It's just easier to win. And so Michigan as a program is depending on average to decent quarterback play. It's good enough to win this iteration of the Big Ten. But on this stage, you know, the everybody sort of moved to their corner. I'm just like, oh, I see. I see who is able to play on this stage. And look, maybe it's Michigan next year or the year after that or something like that, where they take their recruiting up a level and they develop guys, or they, you know, year two of the Mike McDonald defense is really dialed in. But it just, it was early on, it was very clear that, like, oh man, Michigan needs, I don't know, a punt return, a pick six, and a freak Georgia mistake to really be in this game.
To just get some momentum. There was no momentum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you start when you need to tick off those types of boxes, it's going to get ugly quickly.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D. You bet just $5 on any college football team and win $200 in free bets. If they're victorious, we've got a couple games left here, so please consider it. The promo code is SOLID. Mm-hmm. Again, bet on college football this remaining bowl season at DraftKings Sportsbook. You got to be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. Go to DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. So, with all that being said, our college football playoff national championship is officially set. It's going to be played a week from today on Monday, January 10th in sunny Indianapolis, where the SEC goes to win its championships.
I was just informed by Jody with an I that we paid a local teenager to clear snow around our house and the walk and the garage and everything else that needed clearing. I guess have fun with all that, Alabama and Georgia fans, because I'll be returning there in 2 days, and it's a different way of living.
We will be dropping our preview one day this week to get you ready for that national championship. But again, it is Alabama 13-1, Georgia 13-1. Georgia is an early 3-point favorite. I checked this morning. It looks like that is holding steady, at least for now. So we'll discuss that in alarming detail throughout the course of this week. Yes, they played once before. It is a rematch. Bama won that one by 17 about a month ago.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in due time. Shall we go on out to the Rose Bowl in the interim, Dan?
I'd love to.
The Rose Bowl game presented by Capital One Venture X. A good one. A fun one. Ohio State 48, Utah 45. Utah led 35-21 and looked really good. But did get the sense that they weren't exactly holding down the Ohio State offense. Like, even though they were winning, and even though it was halftime, you sort of just like, you could feel the vibrations in the force that Ohio State had a lot of meat left on the bone. And indeed, that was the case. Holy hell, did we get statistics in this game. C.J. Stroud, 572, 6 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 16 targets, 15 catches, and a Rose Bowl record of 346 yards and 3 touchdowns. Just incredible video game numbers here. You can't even put up these numbers in a video game for Jackson Smith and Jigba. And I think on the whole, we could talk about Utah. But just again, to close the loop on this whole statistical anomaly that we saw in this game, absolutely absurd to me that wide receiver 3 goes for 346 and 3 touchdowns. And what was it, like wide receiver 5 or 6 in Marvin Harrison Jr. gets 3 touchdowns in the frickin' Rose Bowl with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave sitting out. So no shortage of talent on this Ohio State offense, as eventually they power their way to victory, led on the arm of Stroud and with the hands and legs and just incredible acrobatics of JSN, who again finished with a Rose Bowl record 346. Fun one to watch as a fan, man. Like, there was no shortage of excitement here.
I am horrified as a college football fan that this wide receiver room also had Jameson Williams in it last season. that, first of all, calling Jaxon Smith-Njigba the number three receiver is, there's a heavy degree of quotes that have to go around that number three.
Yes,
because I think he did set a single season record for receiving yardage for Ohio State now. So he was arguably their best receiver, but cast into a number three role in terms of name recognition and targets. I don't know what the targets look like by the end of the year with Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, obviously having none in the Rose Bowl. But in terms of ceiling, Jaxon Smith-Njigba has the highest, even with Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson in there, to me, just because of what he's able to do in the open field with the ball, what he's able to do in terms of fully dominating a secondary. I think it's a unique quality in that room that's already, as you mentioned, just crazy deep. So you're totally correct with all those things. And yeah, it was the Utah defense, thin as they were, and a lot of ink is going to be spilled, Ty, about what Micah Bernard, the running back playing corner, he led them in tackles, but he was certainly picked on, a good deal by CJ Stroud and Ryan Day in the Ohio State offense. And it just felt as if Utah was doing everything that a team without that kind of offensive firepower, but a good amount of firepower, getting the kickoff return touchdown from Britton Covey, getting that freak touchdown run on what was 4th and 1 that Cam Rising just sort of pinballed off of a bunch of Ohio State dudes and stayed up. Like, I think there's an underrated thickness to how hard Cam Rising runs because he's a big dude. This is not like a sort of just, a replacement level quarterback physically. Like, this dude can throw, this dude can run, and obviously they were a different team once he got in there as the starter. But yeah, there was a bit of an inevitability to Ohio State with how at will they were able to operate on offense, even without being able to run the ball all that consistently. It's just, you have to have the guys in the secondary. Utah didn't. Utah was unable to get home all that often against the Ohio State offensive line, even a shorthanded offensive line. And they didn't necessarily, Utah didn't have those playmakers out wide to push. I mean, what, Ohio State was without its starting corners, right? Marcus Williamson and Seven Banks.
Yep.
So it's the difference in the way that the roster is constructed that Utah still needed another break or two to win this game, even putting up the number of points that they put on Ohio State. Obviously Cam Rising goes down late, but I think it was Bryson Barnes was the backup quarterback who actually threw a couple of dimes to keep Utah in it. I kind of flabbergasted as to why Utah wasn't trying to strategize at the end of the game. They take 3 timeouts into the offseason, which I don't know if you cash them in. I don't know if they're rollover timeouts for the 2022 season.
It's like Retro Bowl. You get credits, coach credits.
I like that. That must be it. That must be it. Kyle Whittingham rolling in the digital front office coaching credits. I was a little taken aback that there was not a further attempt to game out the end of the Rose Bowl from Utah, but otherwise just an incredible watch, an incredible TV show, the most entertaining bowl game that, I mean, depending on your thoughts on, I think it was the Music City Bowl, Tennessee and Purdue, that game was drunk as well, but I had a blast watching this game. It was terrific. I didn't think about Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and Haskell Garrett and Nicholas Petit Frere for a millisecond watching this game, which I'm pretty happy about because that seemed to be something that riled up a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Kirk Herbstreet or something. I didn't think about it for a millisecond, which going in, I was bummed out. We talked about this, that it kind of sucked that those guys weren't playing in this huge game. To me, a huge game that, the Rose Bowl has this importance for a lot of people. Didn't think about it once. Just enjoyed the football and it was great.
All right. Well, again, your final here is 48-45. Ohio State finishes 11-2. Utah with a really good 10-4 campaign just ran
Amazing.
Into a buzzsaw. The one thing that I just wanted to call out one more time here before we move on, we talk a lot about the stats that these guys have put up. CJ Stroud's throwing motion is about the smoothest thing I've seen all college football season.
Yeah.
We hear about quarterbacks all the time who can really spin it, right? It's one of our little jokes here. He can really spin it. There is minimal effort required for him to throw the ball the length of the field. And the fact that he's so young, the fact that he's just getting started, the fact that, frankly, guys like Quinn Ewers are transferring tells you everything you need to know about this guy's ceiling because he had a remarkable finish to an already remarkable season.
It almost felt like, and all season long, I'm saying, there was a basketball on grass, which is an overused term, but it had that feeling of, oh, this guy just starts fast breaks, whether or not they're there or not. That he passes it ahead to a streaking wing or something like that, that the guys were so wide open in that receiver room all over the field. And you watch, you know, the Michigan State game, there were some down moments, of course, you know, Michigan and Oregon, but Ohio State at its best had that feel of, oh, we're playing 5-on-2 basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know who's dunking it this time. I don't know who's hitting an open three this time, but if we are operating, 80 is on the table any given week. And even with, you know, without those two guys at receiver in the Rose Bowl, you're right. There is that just sort of like, oh, this is a backdoor cut that's wide open for yet another 80-yard dunk. And I don't know how you hate on any of that, even if you're a fan of another team. You're like, it's impressive to watch that much athleticism on display. And for CJ Stroud as a first-year starter to look that comfortable as the conductor of that kind of offensive symphony, it's an amazing visual. Also, everything I just said about Ohio State, the opposite is true for that defense. The Ohio State defense.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to the All-State Sugar Bowl. Baylor 21, Ole Miss 7. Matt Corral hurt.
Yep.
Matt Corral hurt towards the end of the first quarter. Speaking of charged Twitter moments where everyone going at Kirk Herbstreit, Corral decided to play. Corral had made comments a few weeks ago that it wasn't like him to sit out. He wanted to play, and good for him. Whatever you want to do, good for you.
Yeah.
He twisted his ankle pretty badly, eventually had to be carted off back to the locker room, came back out on crutches. I saw this morning that x-rays were negative, and it looks like it's just a really bad high ankle sprain. It was ugly, and of course, all of our hearts were in our throats because this is a kid who's clearly going to be drafted pretty highly into the league. You don't want to see anybody get hurt, especially in a game like this, a big game, the All-State Sugar Bowl. So with him going out and Luke Altmaier coming in, clearly that meant advantage Baylor. But this was still a pretty close game late.
Yep.
The Ole Miss defense, for their part, held really well. It wasn't as if there was an offensive explosion, at least on behalf of Gary Bohannon, who did come back, who did play in this game. He only had 40 yards passing, a touchdown, and an interception. The focal point for this Baylor team was Abram Smith. Was that ground attack, 279 yards and a touchdown in this one, is what ultimately gave them the difference. There was a long pick six towards the end of this game that really swung things in Baylor's favor. But for the most part, despite the fact that Corral went out, this is a 7-7 ball game after three quarters, Dan. This was a close matchup.
Yeah, it was close and not that exceptional in terms of offensive fireworks. But yeah, the best thing in this game was clearly Baylor's defense, especially knowing that they would have a green quarterback not used to seeing the type of pressure Baylor is able to bring. And I just, all in all, it was an amazing story, especially with where Baylor was last season, for Baylor to not only win the Big 12, but to come out and win the Sugar Bowl against a program like Ole Miss, obviously a shorthanded Ole Miss. But yeah, not the best watch if you like consistent passing. And, you know, you hope Matt Corral is okay and recovers well. I think he'll have plenty of time. And everything does not need to be a referendum on everything. Matt Corral wanted to play. He knew the risks. I applaud him. I hope he's all right. Everybody, you know, approaches the sport and these types of decisions differently, and you hope for the best for everybody. And so, Matt Corral came out on crutches, and I would imagine that if you asked him if he would do it again, he'd probably say yes to take that chance, because he got Ole Miss to where they were. They had an amazing season. So I came away just thoroughly impressed by Baylor up front. The big man, Ika, was just all over the place. The LSU transfer, Apu Ika.
Yeah.
And Baylor heads into the offseason in a really, really nice spot. I wonder how it'll translate on the recruiting trail moving forward these next couple of seasons. But the Baylor athletic program just in general, winning the national championships in basketball like they have these past few years. It's just, I'm sure it's a great time to be a Baylor Bear.
Yeah, by the way, 10 sacks for the Baylor defensive unit.
Jeez.
So perhaps for Matt Corral, it was better that he took an early exit at the end of the first quarter, because this is a Baylor defense that was hungry. That was a hungry Terrell Bernard, who got hurt last year. One of the things that we talked about in the 2020 season, 17 tackles, 10 of which were solo. So he had a man's effort out there, a total dude in helping his team to victory. Baylor finishes with a 12-2 mark. They, of course, won the Big 12. Ole Miss 10-3. I was going back before we recorded, and I was looking at some of the, I guess, early polls, like the coaches poll, and Ole Miss wasn't a top 10 team. They were a top 25 team. But right. I think by any measure, this is a very successful campaign for Lane Kiffin.
Oh, yeah.
And that Ole Miss squad.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl, if we must. Oh my gosh.
I actually, this game was the reason why I felt pretty good about going out and getting a snack before the Rose Bowl. I was like, wow, 28-7? All right. Good job, Notre Dame. A nice start to the Marcus Freeman era. I'm sure this will all go swimmingly.
Oh, my gosh. Oklahoma State went down 28-7 in the first half. They proceeded to rip off 30 straight points to grab the lead. They played with tempo in the second half. Notre Dame had no answer for it. It definitely was a case, at least to my untrained eye, of Mike Gundy of Oklahoma State making necessary adjustments and Notre Dame not knowing how. That's how it felt. And so in the second half, the complexion of the game changed pretty dramatically, not just from the Oklahoma State offense, which found its legs, but the Notre Dame offense suddenly couldn't do what they were doing. I saw our friend Pete Sampson tweeting out like, okay, somebody's got to figure out what's going on with Jack Cohn here. Jack Cohn had a great game. He had 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. Most of that in the first half, mind you. But second half, it just, the game was moving at a different clip, at a different pace. He wasn't seeing the field as well. And credit to Oklahoma State for mounting a huge comeback here. Mike Gundy said, quote, clearly the biggest win in the history of the school as they win the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. And you have to give them credit. Like, I could talk to them blue in the face about the Notre Dame offense and how they basically went air raid in this one and all the good things that we saw from the first half of the Marcus Freeman era. And there's plenty to say about the second half as well. But I just don't want to overshadow the fact that this was a hell of an effort from Oklahoma State to just not lose their poise. Spencer Sanders played a hell of a game. He had the fumble late, which might have cost them, but ultimately didn't. Credit to them for keeping it together, for staying motivated and not just packing this one in early.
And it could have been uglier too, right? Brennan Presley fumbled it on the goal line as he's about to score.
Yeah.
So they would have gone up 10, I think, in that moment. So it could have, like, just a wild game as I watched it back. And one of those things that you could depend on this year is win or lose. There was something about Oklahoma State's defense in the second half, and I was trying to remember the show, and I finally did. Do you remember the show that involved the doctor who was like that was specially trained to diagnose, right, the rare diseases and disorders and health situations?
House
MD.
Yeah.
There is something to Knowles MD, because what he was able to do throughout the Big 12 season, you saw it in the Bedlam game, right? That I don't think Oklahoma got in the end zone on offense after, you know, moving the ball kind of at will in that first half. I don't know what kind of adjustment Oklahoma State made against Notre Dame. I do know if I told you ahead of that game that Jack Cohn is going to throw the ball damn near 70 times, it would not have made you excited to watch.
No, well, if you had told me that he threw the ball 68 times, I would have assumed that they were losing by 40 points and that this was the only way they could inch their way back into it. But
right,
what was apparent, I think, from the jump is that they felt if they got the ball out of his hands quickly, they did a lot of five wide. They did a lot of motion. They were trying to get the ball to their playmakers in space. They did a great job of that early. In the second half, like you said, Knowles MD diagnosed the situation at halftime, came out, and a lot of those plays weren't there for Jack Cohn. And because they were off the field so quickly, and because Oklahoma State was playing with tempo, Notre Dame was gassed on defense. They couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. First off, whatever they did on offense, Oklahoma State, I think centered around throwing at Clarence Lewis, because Tay Martin had a field day. They kept getting that matchup. Oh, yeah. They kept picking on Clarence Lewis, who I saw some folks tweeting out went full Gary Gray, which deep cut for Notre Dame fans out there. that matchup in particular, that tempo, it just all worked together and catapulted Oklahoma State to a 37-35 victory. Even despite the fact that Notre Dame gave up all those points in the second half, they still had an opportunity late to get back in this thing, potentially win it, and the Noles defense just came through.
Well, Ty, as a charter member of the host of the Solid Verbal who has watched his team give away 30-ish unanswered in a loss to a Big 12 team during bowl season, may I just say welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to my brother in choking arms, because
it's good to be here. Thank
doesn't
you.
And at least Notre Dame's quarterback was healthy for all four quarters. And there was at least hope that Notre Dame could make 3-7 plays to somehow pull victory back to South Bend. Notre Dame falls. What was the number? They're now 0-10 in their last 10 major bowl games.
Oh, my God. It feels like 0-100. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not ideal, but.
Should not be a referendum on Marcus Freeman being thrust into this position. For all intents and purposes, he's an interim coach yesterday. He is the full-time coach moving forward, but thrust into an interim situation to close out this season. So, again, I don't look at that as any sort of defining game for Marcus Freeman as a head coach. The Marcus Freeman era starts today, to me. So, I'm excited to see what Notre Dame looks like moving forward, but man, Oklahoma State, way to battle. Spencer Sanders, mathematically, we talked about this a little, it would have been very difficult for him to have back-to-back 3 or 4 interception games, just with the way his career has played out. He's been a little bit undisciplined throwing the ball into, downfield or whatever, but he was due for a pretty good game, and you called this too, that he's going to have 2 or 3 plays with his feet that are going to change field position. And he did.
Yeah.
And
he did.
He was the leading rusher, I believe, for the Pokes, right?
Yep.
An awesome effort. Gundy's right. That, it was either this game or I think who'd they beat in the Fiesta a decade ago? Stanford, I want to say.
Like sure.
41-38, something along those lines. So great for Oklahoma State, way to stay with it. And the belief system there with like no lead is comfortable when, there's a belief in this offense and Jim Knowles' ability to adjust. Awesome watch. Not for you, but just in general, as a nonpartisan person watching this game, it was fun to see, especially in the shadow of two pretty horrific games to watch in the playoff.
All right, let's go on over to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. We're going to jump around a little bit here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Michigan State 31, Pitt 21. Pitt led 21-10 midway through the fourth quarter. And that's despite the fact that Kenny Pickett opted out and Nick Patty, their backup, went down with an injury. So they're down to their third string guy, Davis Bevel, who for his own part didn't do terribly. 14 of 18, no, 149, okay. A touchdown, a pick. He was under a lot of duress, which I think is the main takeaway because Michigan State brought the house. But, you know, got a fumble return for a touchdown right at the start of the third quarter to pad their lead. They're up, again, 21-10 midway through the fourth quarter in the final 8 minutes, as is ever the story of the Michigan State Spartans in 2021. Sparty rips off 21 unanswered to win. They cap it off with a late 78-yard interception return by Cal Halliday, their linebacker. But two late touchdown passes from Peyton Thorne gave Sparty win number 11 on the season. He finished with 354 passing and three touchdowns. Not much of a ground attack for him because Kenneth Walker III was sitting out. But Peyton Thorne, man, like, didn't always have great games, but clearly was a catalyst for this team in a really big moment in a New Year's Six bowl game. Michigan State on the whole, just sort of like too stubborn to die this season. You could never count them out, especially in bowl season, right? And we talked about this in the buildup. Michigan State, you were never going to out-effort them. They were always motivated to play. They played every game hard from whistle to whistle. And they did it again here, 31-21. They mount the comeback late. They get the job done in a really big spot against a good team. Like, I came away very impressed with Pitt because they were without Kenny Pickett, without their backup. And still, you got Jordan Addison out there, who's clearly going to be an NFL guy. Like, so good in the open field. The Pitt defense was very, very good as well. A lot to like about both these teams. But again, it is that motivation station with Michigan State, finding guys who step up in a big moment to get the job done. 31-21. Congrats to them.
Yeah, easier with your starting quarterback to win a game like this and to come back in a game like this, and it certainly was eventually for Michigan State. And yeah, you know, tip of the cap for Michigan State. You know, it's from where they were at the end of the Mark D'Antonio era with like the empty senior day. If you remember that visual of guys coming out with parents to kind of an empty stadium in East Lansing, and to where they are now, and sure, Pitt's down to its third string quarterback, and sure, like the Ohio State and Purdue games were ugly. I get all of that, but they weathered. This is, you know, Michigan State was sort of the defining win your clunker team in a very positive way of 2021. The way that they were able to come back against Michigan, the way that they beat Miami at times looking like they were going to lose that game at times. That was a nice win for Michigan State, and going down like they did against Pitt's third string quarterback. And I did see Message Board Geniuses, the Twitter account, which might be the only good college football Twitter account. There was some Pitt fan who said, "I have no respect for Michigan State. You almost lost to our third string. Your conference is terrible. I have nothing good to say about Michigan State." I love that energy heading into the new year. I loved it so much. And Michigan State, they won their clunker. How do you not tip your cap to that? I love it.
Let's move on. Let's go to the Outback Bowl. Another Big Ten team in action. Arkansas 24, Penn State 10. How much of this game did you watch?
A good chunk.
Penn State was without six of their best players. Five of which were key contributors on defense. Bunch of guys opted out. It didn't show initially. Initially, I actually felt pretty good about Penn State because the defense looked solid in the first half. But over the course of the game, it really began to show. Because Sam Pittman saw it. He just eventually switched up to a full zone read rushing offense. And so if you're looking at KJ Jefferson's stat line and you're saying, wow, he just had 98 yards passing, what happened? Well, he had 110 and a touchdown on the ground. Between him and Raheem Sanders and Dominique Johnson and Malik Hornsby, who came in and was just freaking playing like zone read quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Officially, 58 rushing attempts, 353 yards and three touchdowns. Penn State led at half. Arkansas shut him down in the second half and just ran the hell out of the ball. That was all they had to do.
Directly at Penn State, yeah. Especially KJ Jefferson on those big third and fourth downs, yeah.
KJ Jefferson did what he had to do to win this game. So I thought, again, if the motto of the moment is making your adjustments at halftime, Mike Gundy did it. Arkansas clearly did it here against Penn State. Just seeing what they saw on film, running the hell out of the ball, wearing down a Penn State defense that was clearly playing shorthanded.
Yeah, and Arkansas doing what it does to a lot of quarterbacks, which is make them think for an extra second and a half, you know, dropping that third safety deep. Where is this guy going to break? Where is this guy going to go? And made Sean Clifford think way too long. And it showed. It showed. I mean, you know, Penn State's shorthanded. A lot of these teams are shorthanded. That's just sort of the reality of bowl season in 2022. But you could see that Barry Odom and the entirety of the Arkansas defense really came to play and gave Sean Clifford way too much to think about.
Clifford was okay. Two picks in this game.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Parker Washington still on the field, despite the fact that Jahan Dotson had opted out. Parker Washington had a great game. Had one of those Odell catches where he reached caught
that
it one-handed.
Was an amazing catch. Mm-hmm.
He led the receiving corps with 98 yards, seven catches. But Clifford had two picks. We can talk in the offseason about whether or not he should have come back or announced that he's coming back for the 2022 campaign. I have thoughts on that. And I thought this game actually was a pretty good microcosm for my feelings on Sean Clifford. Like, he's not a bad quarterback. It's just like you said with Cade McNamara, there's a very obvious ceiling.
Yep.
And he makes some mistakes that are going to cost him. Again, we'll get into that in the offseason, but a great win here for Arkansas. Great season for Arkansas, man. 9-4. 9-4 with this kind of schedule. Granted, mm-hmm. some of the teams on that schedule didn't live up to the billing. But if you're Sam Pittman, man, year two, doing what they did here. If you are a Hogs fan, you got to be thrilled. What a campaign for them.
Yeah, and they get Jaden Hazelwood coming in. I'm just a KJ Jefferson super fan, unabashed. He is everything I'd like in a quarterback. Now, didn't throw a ton, obviously, against a still pretty strong Penn State defense, but his ceiling is tantalizing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He's incredible. Okay, so big win for Arkansas. Let's go over to the Verbo Citrus Bowl. Kentucky 20, Iowa 17. This one kind of started off boring and Iowa-esque, and it's seeming like a snoozer. The first half moved very quickly. They were mm-hmm. 3 minutes into the third quarter when Notre Dame and Oklahoma State went to halftime, and they both kicked off at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
This game ended up being beautiful, in its own way beautiful.
Yeah.
But after that lousy first half, Iowa storms back, scores 14 straight points to grab a lead early in the fourth quarter. They held the lead until the final minutes when Kentucky went on an 8-play, 85-yard drive in just a minute and 43 seconds, due in large part to a great effort from Wandale Robinson, hometown kid, Wandale Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
A gorgeous.
Oh, he was everywhere.
Gorgeous 52-yard catch and run that set up a Christopher Rodriguez 6-yard score for the win. Iowa did its thing, you know, finished with seven sacks. They had Will Levis running for his life pretty much the entire game. And I got to credit Iowa's offense because they did show flashes of creativity and looked a lot better in the second half. Still only scored 17 points. Let's not get too carried away here. But it was again apparent to me that if they want to get creative and if they actually want to do something with their athletes, they mm-hmm. can. And it's Brian Ferentz holding them up. Like, please do more of what we saw down the stretch. No more play action passes on third and 10. They don't work in real life.
No.
Boring game at the start, but finished off in, I thought, a really exciting fashion.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's Will Levis weathering Iowa, completely dominating the offensive line in front of him. And to make those plays at the end of the game, to lead that drive, to make plays. That was crazy impressive. Kentucky shorthanded, at least on defense. But I think, Kavassier Smoke didn't play in this game. No Josh Ali. So they're down a bunch of dudes that would have contributed to a win. And fortunately for Kentucky, they have that game-ending drive. And you're right. Iowa did open things up impressively enough. You know, the throwback stuff. They ran the ball well. Just not enough. There's just too many long stretches of Iowa offensive malaise to win games like this. So It was a fun watch in that second half. I wish it would have been four quarters of fun.
Let's go over to the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl. Another fun one, Dan. This one went to overtime.
Yes, it did.
This wasn't fun with a qualifier. This was just fun, period. 93 points, close to 1,300 yards, a ton of big chunk plays in this one. I had a Tennessee -5 bet, so I was on the edge of my seat here. Tennessee got screwed. Did you see the end of this?
Yeah, I have mixed thoughts. I mean, the guy was pulled forward into the end zone, which is a penalty. So I don't know how I feel, but continue.
Here is the context, okay? First overtime period, Jalen Wright, the ball carrier for Tennessee, whistled down just short of the goal line on fourth down.
The right. Call, it was a quick whistle. For sure a quick whistle.
It was a very quick whistle. The call in the field was that his forward progress had been stopped just before he reached the ball over the line with the second effort. They reviewed it, but forward progress is like almost never overturned. That's impossible to overturn.
Right.
I thought it was a terrible call. I thought it was awful. It was a quick whistle. I understand why they can't overturn that with replay, but they should have given Tennessee the touchdown. They may not have won, but it should have been a touchdown. In so doing, Purdue ends up going to win the game with a field goal, 48-45. Hell of a win for them. This is a good game. They were without David Bell, without George Karloftis. So to do what they did this season and then to win this bowl game against a good SEC team and a good quarterback in Hendon Hooker with 5 touchdowns and 378 passing.
Yeah, Cedric Tillman was ridiculous.
Not a lot of defense here, but Jeff Brohm, again, leads the Spoilermakers to victory. They finished 9-4, which is just a remarkable campaign that nobody saw coming at the start of the year. So credit to them where it's due.
I certainly did not. I am raising my hand. I did not see this team as an 8-win regular season team with a bowl win over a dangerous Tennessee team. That would have surprised me if you told me that in August. And yeah, good for Purdue for weathering their own mistakes. Aiden O'Connell threw, what, 3 picks?
Yep.
They're able to, I mean, they were up in this game late. And so game goes to overtime and get the stop they need and win it. I don't know what to say. I mean, like, it was a quick whistle. I understand the controversy from that call. If anything, I saw our friend Crispy Brown, who is a, you know, a biased Purdue alum, but saying it was a quick whistle. If you want to call the penalty as well, then it's 4th and 7 or whatever. And Tennessee has one more chance to get it because you're allowed to push but not pull a ball carrier. So I don't know. I think it's good TV for me. And I understand if you're a Tennessee fan, if you're pissed. And I understand if you're a Purdue fan thinking, whatever, win's a win. Onward.
Yeah. The future is bright for both these teams, by the way. Hendon Hooker coming back.
Oh, yeah.
For Tennessee, he was one of, if not the most efficient passers in all the nation. And more talent on the way at the quarterback position, especially for the Purdue Boilermakers. So a lot to like, a lot to be excited about as they win the Music City Bowl. Let's stick with more Big Ten teams in bowl action. The SRS Las Vegas Bowl between Wisconsin and Arizona State. Wisconsin has a 7-point lead with 9:57 left in the game. And they got the ball back on their own 3-yard line. And then they ran an 18-play drive that burned off the entire remaining quarter to seal the W. They didn't even score. No. They just burned off.
They just sat on them.
Just burned it off. Arizona State was without their top 2 running backs in this game, which sort of made it impossible for them to score. They didn't really have much in the way of offense. Braylon Allen, big game, 159, had the MVP award for this game. Yeah, I don't know if this was a huge surprise. It sort of went the way I expected. And a credit to Wisconsin on finishing 9-4. It's a great story despite starting out 1-3.
I mean, Graham Mertz completing 70% of his passes and having success downfield. A bit of a surprise to me. Braylon Allen running like he did, not a surprise. Wisconsin winning this game in the manner in which they did against a shorthanded ASU, not a big surprise. And good for Wisconsin, given the struggles that they had early on in the season, to finish it out with a bowl win against a big team. And I'm not going to say the Vegas Bowl is all that big, but win is better than a loss.
Absolutely. 2 more games here to discuss. Let's go over to the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. Wake Forest 38, Rutgers 10. Rutgers was a late addition to this game because A&M had to back out. They came in as a 17-point dog, and they lasted about a quarter until this one started getting out of hand. In fairness, it was sort of an impossible ask. Like, come on.
Right.
Like, what do we really expect here? 304 yards and 3 touchdowns for Sam Hartman. A big game for A.T. Perry, who had 10 catches for 127 and a touch. Wake Forest, 11 wins for just the second time.
Amazing.
In program history. Good on them.
One of the more brutal, fun offenses to watch in Wake Forest, but Wake to 11 wins, do whatever gets you there. Who am I to judge? Yeah, great for Wake. I mean, I don't know how far back we didn't. Have we talked about Oregon, Oklahoma?
We did.
How far did we? I forget all of these things. And we talked about like Dakarian Joyner in South Carolina being a surprise quarterback. I forget all of these things. Yeah, what else? What do we have left? The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl?
Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, man. Central Michigan wins 24-21. A weird circumstance here as well. Central Michigan, the Chippewas, originally slated for the Arizona Bowl, but they ended up in this one because Miami backed out, and nobody says no to that Tony the Tiger money. If you have the chance, if it comes calling, nobody says no to Tony the Tiger. Sort of a surprising outcome here, to be honest, especially since Central Michigan had short notice to get prepped for Wazoo. And Wazoo had played hard all season for Jake Dickard. And it didn't help that Jaden DeLoren got hurt here, but sure.
Correct.
And the bit I saw, they just didn't play well. They were out of sync. Central jumped out to a 21-0 halftime lead and sort of milked it. Sort of milked it to end up getting the dub 24-21.
Was that intentional with Tony the Tiger and Frosted Flakes and milking it? Was that a thing that you thought
it wasn't
about
a bit? That
time?
Was not a bit. No, no.
Wow. That's how much of a pro you are, that you were just in the mindset and the right words just happened to be on the tip of your tongue.
Not a bit. I promise you.
Yeah. Good for the Chips. You know, I'm anti-Chip because of a personal thing from a long time ago where I feel like the wrestling team stole a microphone transmitter of mine. But, you know, to short notice take on a new opponent, it's can't be easy. And good for Jim McElwain and the Chippewas. I don't believe he was doused with anything like sweet Frosted Flake milk from a Gatorade cooler. There was nothing.
I think he had Frosted Flakes poured on him, didn't he?
Were they Frosted Flakes? Okay, good for him. That doesn't seem so bad.
Did you want to talk about the mayo? That we mentioned it because we were recording.
Oh, while during the show, yeah.
Yeah, during the show, we were giving live updates in an on-demand universe what was transpiring between North Carolina and South Carolina. We mentioned that Shane Beamer was going to get the mayo bath. They almost knocked him out. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah. They nailed him on the head. You made some sort of joke on Twitter about entering the mayo concussion protocol, correct?
They needed to give it a bit of a jolt in order to get that mayo out. They claim to have watered it down, but nonetheless, yeah. It
was sludgy.
It was definitely a bit hairy there for a second. South Carolina wins 38-21 over North Carolina, continuing the charmed season for Frank Beamer. You mentioned the surprise
Shane
showing.
Beamer, but Frank Beamer probably had a good time too.
I said Frank, I meant Shane. Dakarian Joyner, whom you mentioned earlier, 9-for-9 as a quarterback with 160 yards passing and one touchdown.
Amazing story.
On the day. Big effort on the ground for Kevin Harris, who had a 182 here. So Sam Howell announced that he's going pro. Not really a big surprise there, but did play in this game.
Shane Beamer calling out, was it Dennis Dodd after the
Dennis
game?
Dennis Dodd, yep, calling him miserable, yep.
Calling him miserable, which I've met Dennis Dodd. He seems like a nice enough dude to me, but because I guess he picked against South Carolina in a big way in August, whatever, ahead of the season. South Carolina was an absolute surprise team, both to make it to a bowl and to win a bowl like they did. And the fact that they did the reverse of the usual narrative of, okay, this quarterback's not working out, he's now playing linebacker, he's now all over the field at safety, whatever. The fact that they bring in Dakarian Joyner as a quarterback, a much heralded high school quarterback, plays receiver for 3 years, line him up at receiver during the 20 minutes of media availability at practice earlier in the week, and then start him at quarterback, who is what, the third or fourth quarterback to play for South Carolina, and have him wildly succeed? I love that inverted narrative. It's amazing.
And you got to be excited if you're a South Carolina fan because
Support
is on the way, right? Spencer Rattler, we'll see which direction things go there, but this is a team that played hard for Shane Beamer and probably Frank as well. So,
sure.
More to come in the South Carolina story. The Shane Beamer hire, though, looking like it's paying some early dividends. Anything further, Dan, before we let the fine people go here?
I don't know. I don't. Is there any like sort of draft declaration or coach movement or anything like that? Any news item that stands out to you, or is that something we want to save for a future show to drill down on a little deeper?
We need off season content, man.
Yeah, it's true. We do. So
we're gonna save that until we have more to offer. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com, again for more information on how you can get our past shows. Please do subscribe, rate, review, like, tell your friends about our podcast out on Apple and Spotify. Follow along on social media. Follow along on YouTube at youtube.com/thesolidverbal. And don't forget to go on out to solidgiveaway.com. That's where you can get your name in the hat to win that Desmond Howard signed mini helmet. That contest is ongoing for about another week or so.
Did you eat well? You asked me what my watch setup and eating setup was. How'd you do?
You know, not really. I had a COVID scare.
I know. You're feeling okay now, though, right?
I'm okay, but I thought I had it. I thought I caught it.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I didn't. But I was feeling out of sorts and therefore wasn't going to go out and be around people and pick up food or any of that stuff. I did the responsible thing. And we pulled the move where we made two cauliflower pizzas in the oven.
Oh, no.
On New Year's Day.
So you got to go big for the national championship then.
For the national championship, it will be like a feast of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
Good. I love to hear that. I
have not decided yet what that will be, but we've got a week to decide, Dan. Don't forget, we will be doing our national championship preview over the course of the next week. We will be doing something, I'm sure, for the national championship as well. So stay tuned here if you like the verbal for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks for downloading, listening, playing along at home. We'll be back in a few short days. In the meantime, as always, stay solid.
Peace.